Hello and welcome to Focus on Business. I'm your host, Lee Strickland. On today's program, we are talking with Brian Toomey, CEO of Piedmont Health Services Incorporated. Brian joined Piedmont Health Services as CEO in 2005, and since then, PHS has grown significantly under his leadership. They have a staff of over 370, an annual operating budget of over $333 million, and numerous locations throughout our area. He has focused on expanding health centers' services to more individuals needing access to care, development of senior care locations, and working collaboratively around the care area that is underserved. He has been chairman of North Carolina Community Health Center Association Board and has attended Boston College, the graduate social work program that awarded him the Distinguished Alumni Award in 2012. He is also inducted in 2014 to the NACHC Grassroots Hall of Fame. His education is from Wake Forest, with a bachelor's in history, and he has an MSW in casework from Boston College. Piedmont Health Services was established in 1970 as the Orange Chatham Comprehensive Health Services. In 1994, they became Piedmont Health Services Incorporated. Brian, thanks for being on the show today.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Your organization is growing. So tell us about that growth, the direction you're going, and just how you've led the organization to achieve its goals.
Sure. So we have, we've been fortunate that we are growing. We have our traditional piece of our work, which is our community health centers. And we've been around doing community health center work since 1970.
So for the listener, what is a community health center?
So community health center is also known as, sometimes known as an FQHC or a federally qualified health center. It's basically a federal designation for about 1,200 organizations in this country, 37 in the state of North Carolina. And our job is to provide health care, primary medical care, to communities and individuals who otherwise wouldn't be able to get access to health care.
So uninsured, underserved?
Uninsured, underserved. The three prime areas that the Bureau defines as we should serve are uninsured, Medicare, Medicaid, and anybody. And the fourth element is anybody who either because of language or ethnicity or distances would find it difficult to get the primary medical care.
Okay, so you've been building this community health centers, and I'll let you continue from there.
Sure. So I get credit for doing the work that all of our staff does. So this, in 2014, we served just over 42,000 people. We served people on a regular basis from about 14 counties in North Carolina. And we think we'll serve in 2015 somewhere around 43,000. We're on track by 5 years from about in the year 2020 to be at about 50,000 patients per year. Again, fortunate to have that. We have, and in this new fiscal year, which we just started, our fiscal year is January. So our new numbers are, as of this pay period, we actually have 442 people are employed with us. We think that number is going to be closer to 480 by the end of this year. Certainly by 2 years from now, will be about 520 employees. Our operating budget for the whole corporation this year is $53.5 million. We think in 5 years it's going to be closer to $75 million.
So you're growing rapidly. How's the Affordable Health Care Act impacted what you do? Has it helped? Has it hurt? Has it complicated things?
It certainly has helped us. It certainly has helped our patients. We think we're one of the few developed countries where the access to care isn't technology or provider numbers. It's many times it's having the dollars to afford to get into healthcare. And so having more people insured just allows more people to get care. We saw a shift in our uninsured number of people who are uninsured with us drop by several thousand. And the concomitant number was the number of insured dropped by about the same number, increased by the same number. So it's been great.
You're providing the primary care, you said. So what is included under the primary care umbrella?
Right, so for us, primary care is seeing what everybody thinks about as for old-timers like me, was Marcus Welby.
The
general practitioner. So the family doctor, and that's our model. You'd come see either a physician and or an advanced practice provider. That would be a nurse practitioner or physician assistant. About two-thirds of our providers are physicians, and about a third are advanced practitioners. In addition to that, we also have at all of our sites, we have on-site pharmacy. So we want to make sure that even though we can see people for that otherwise couldn't get into care, we want to make sure they can also get their prescriptions filled. So because we're a health center, we participate in a 340B program, which allows people to get medications at a highly discounted rate, sometimes $4 to $10 a script.
And so, and that's one of the biggest problems with healthcare is that the non-compliance with the medications. We skip them to spread them out to save money. We don't complete a prescription. We don't get it refilled, all of those types of things. And so you're able to overcome that with that service there.
Yeah, we absolutely want to make sure that people don't have any barriers to the care that they need so that they don't have to get into more expensive care, emergency room care, inpatient care, or put off taking care of a chronic illness that they should take care of today. You know, if we saw healthcare the way sometimes we see education, we wouldn't expect a student to be able to skimp out on classes or educational opportunities and still get the same grade at the end of the year. We want to make sure everybody gets that same opportunity.
So how do people find you and how do they decide to come to your centers?
So we have 10 centers right now, 10 community health centers, as well as two PACE programs. I'm going to talk a little bit more about that. We think that's a pretty neat innovation. And if they went to either to our website, Piedmont Health Services, they would see the names of all of our sites and the specific phone numbers for each one of those.
So it's piedmonthealthservices.org.
That's right. And so if they go there, they can see it. They'll see the sites. They'll see the hours posted. There'll be, a way to get in touch with people at those specific addresses.
So what happens with ongoing, chronic type things? They get to come back as much as they need. There's no limitations like in some insurances or low-cost insurance, those kind of things. They're with you through the course of their entire health existence, let's put it that way.
Yes. So first of all, we have just under 50% of our patients are uninsured. So there is no third-party payer or insurance company there. So for that group, it's really between us and them about what makes sense for their health care. And within, let's just use that group. It's true for all of our patients, but particularly that group. That's a group that either will come because they have an urgent care need and they want to come to something that's affordable. And so we're happy to take care of them that way. The other group would be someone who has uninsured but has a chronic illness. Say they have diabetes or high blood pressure, high cholesterol. We will take care of them in a way that we will reduce the number of billable fees that you might get and you're going to a physician, and then make sure that they get affordable lab care as well as pharmacy. So any labs that are done when someone's uninsured with us is actually covered with us. We were fortunate to partner with LabCorp on this piece, so we pay for those labs. And then we want to be effective in what we do and how we do it, and we don't want to waste our patients' money nor our money.
So you mentioned PACE. You said there were some PACE programs. What is PACE, and what is the innovation you've put in place there?
So PACE stands for Program of All-Inclusive Care for the Elderly. And when we started this, our PACE program, just over 7 years ago, we enrolled our first people in December 2008, and we started it about 2006 is probably the best time we really got active in starting our program. At that point, there was actually about 60 of them in the country, and there's now 120 in the country. And Program All-Inclusive Care for the Elderly, in order to qualify for PACE, you have to be at least 55 years of age, live in this.
Yeah, I just have to say that's not elderly, but okay.
Well, of course, I totally agree with that. I describe it as Program All-Inclusive Care for everybody, right?
For seasoned individuals. Let's call them seasoned.
That's the one. And so you have to be at least 55, nursing home level of care, and that's determined by each state decides what that is. And usually that means you need help either with bathing, cleaning. You know, you can't live totally independently, and you have
making sure you take your medications, those types
right.
of things.
So it's, those are called activity of daily living, ADLs. And you have to have, in this state, approximately three of those. So if you need help with at least three of those things, and you can now live safe, so you the state says you really qualify for a nursing home. And instead of going into a nursing home, which most people don't want to do, you can enroll with us, and we are now responsible for all of your care.
So is it kind of like an assisted living center, or is it you interacting with someone in their home?
It's interacting with them in their home. So mm-hmm. we have an adult day health center is the core of what we do. Around that, we have 11 different specialties, occupational therapy, physical therapy, nutrition therapy, physician, nursing, social work, pharmacy, the like. And we do a comprehensive care plan. What's different about this program is there are several things. One is you have to volunteer to be participating in it, and you actually disenroll from Medicare and Medicaid, and we now are now your provider of care. We also are now the payer of care.
And the funding comes from where for that program?
So we get paid by both Medicaid, okay. which would pay for the nursing home piece if you're Medicaid
right.
eligible. We also have people who private pay to come with us instead of going into nursing home. They want to pay us to stay at home. And Medicare pays for the Medicare ABC as well as the Medicare Part D piece. We get actually a fixed payment or capitated payment per member per month for each person. And for that fixed payment, we're now responsible for everything that person needs. So so for instance, our typical person is a participant is 78 years of age.
Okay.
They have 10 medical diagnoses. They have 6 activity of daily living needs. You know, they need help with
right.
bathing, cleaning. And will have 9 prescriptions. So this is a very frail elder. That's
right.
our typical person. Our goal now, what's different about the way you get paid through capitation and also how you provide care, more importantly, and fee-for-service is, in fee-for-service world, you want to create as many services to create as many fees.
And many as reoccurrences of those services. Right?
Right. But with capitation, we get a fixed dollar amount. And so our job isn't to figure out how to spend less money on a person. Our job is to figure out how do we do the right thing for people at the right time in the right place? Because then we're really reducing the cost of care and making people happier. So that description of the person, the 78-year-old with all
right.
medical needs, we're averaging now 1 hospitalization per person every 2 years and 1 emergency room visit per person every 3 years. And we're quite pleased with how we can allow people to stay at home as opposed to going to a nursing home.
Well, and I remember when my great aunt was in her 80s, and my uncle was like, well, she's going to have to go to a nursing home. I was like, no, she has enough money. She can stay in her home, and we brought her, in-home care. I said, if she dies broke, she dies broke. She needs to stay in her home as long as possible, as long as there was no reason to take her somewhere else. So I think that's really important. And there's more and more baby boomers, those of us 1964 and older years. That's the makeup of the population. That's a big concern that we have. So we're thinking long-term care insurance, those types of things, is what they can use as a private payer to get your services? Or?
So, people, that's one option. For us, we see us, this follows our mandate and mission with taking care of people others don't necessarily want to take care of. And so we would see someone who's more likely to be on Medicaid or okay. Medicaid eligible. Doesn't have to be that way. So as you said, every day 10,000 people turn 65. That's every day. And when you turn 65, you don't necessarily need a nursing home
right.
the next day. But in North Carolina, relatively soon, 85 of the counties in North Carolina will have more people over the age of 65 than under the age of 18. And so we have to understand what that means, and not just from a care perspective, but how do we really allocate resources in a way for our economy of our state so that we're actually not removing people from counties to go into large nursing homes, But instead, we're keeping them at home and creating job opportunities for people to stay local and live local and not ruin the economy of a lot of the rural counties in North Carolina.
So that sort of points towards one of the business things that we see, that we see healthcare workers as one of the growing job descriptions or business opportunities are out there. So the Visiting Angels, the different types of organizations that are out there, either through franchises or independent, that are out there focusing on home care and services. And it's really a symptom of the aging of our population.
That's absolutely correct. I'm a baby boomer, and when I grew up, here's the United States. We had this bolus of kids,
right.
And in every state, local community, and the country, we decided that the United States was willing to go into debt and build lots of new schools,
right.
Because we were educating the future of America. Okay, and that large bolus of people required that. Well, you fast forward 60 years, 65 years. Are we going to go into debt to put people in facilities they don't want to be in?
Right.
Or should we figure out a way to keep them at home? And we think that this is a way to have people be happier, and it actually costs the state less money when they work with us.
Well, and they may be ill, but it doesn't mean they're not contributing or non-functioning. I mean, we have show hosts that are in their 70s and 80s. I mean, so they're still involved in the community. They just may not be able to function at home to do all the things. They may have some of those functional things that become an issue. God, I thank God that our hosts are not that way, but we have people with the health challenges and things. So when we think about it, that knowledge, that richness of the life experience of what they've seen and what they know and that leadership and those types of things would be completely missing if we just kind of move all of our seniors out of our communities because of healthcare issues.
So I totally agree, and I think it really reflects what we see as our values and what we need to do. I think sometimes we get stuck with, it's got to be this because I don't know any other way to do something.
Right.
And again, we get paid 95% by Medicaid. Medicaid pays us 5% less what they would pay a nursing home. Okay. So
it's a taxpayer cost saving to do this model also.
Everybody comes to us guaranteed. It's guaranteed, and that's the total that will be paid. It's not any more. It's not any less. It's that. So it's a predicted cost, and it's lower cost. It's what the governments actually are, state governments, asking they wish they had for all of Medicaid. We think that this is a model to really think through with a lot more ways to provide medical care.
So what challenges does it provide in having that set amount that you're being paid when you have these complex 78-year-olds, you know, 9 prescriptions, 10 issues, and how do you provide that care of service and staffing and all those kind of things to know who you're going to need and when you're going to need them?
So my CFO and I joke, the two words that comes to mind is always full risk, okay? But it's also full benefit. And what I describe is it's really four compass points. So when you have full risk, on the other side of the compass, you need full benefit. But the other two compass points is if you have full responsibility for care like we do, we want to have the authority to be able to provide the care. So we are the prior approval. You know, so we are the ones responsible for providing the care, but we only do it as a partner in care with the family and the participant. And that's a key piece. Probably the biggest challenge for all of us as an organization, families, and participants is it's a model that nobody really knows. And so it's much like where hospice was 35 years
right.
ago, because it was all new. What do you mean you're trying to help people die at home? What does that mean? Isn't that being cheap? It's all of a sudden, it's now we take it for granted. We think that's going to be true for PACE. Because and providers, whether you're a nutritionist or a recreational therapist or a physician, you're all trained in trying to figure out how many fees for how many services you can generate or what you have permission for with this kind of diagnosis. To retrain people so they understand that they're not really doing this based on what they're trained on for payment, but really doing it based on what makes sense, that's just a hard thing to shift.
Well, yeah, because we hear people, they have a medical condition, they have a certain prescription that they've worked with their doctor to find that minimizes the side effects, maximizes the results. Their insurance year changes, and suddenly that, you know, no, you have to take this prescription. Well, I tried that one 4 years ago, and I can't take that one. It doesn't work. But no, you have to switch to this one because the insurance plan doesn't pay for the one that you so carefully went through the process. And what you're saying is because of this model, that goes away, right?
Because we are the insurance plan. It's so very different that way. And so, again, the advantage is we have flexibility, and probably the disadvantage is we have flexibility. So let me give you an example. So for many people this age, they sometimes live at home alone.
Right.
Except they're not home alone. They're home alone with not any other human beings, but oftentimes they'll have their best friend is one of their pets.
The cat, the dog, the bird.
Right.
Yeah.
So we can do what we need to do with our dollars to make the most sense. So PACE program, participant's best friend happened with us was their dog. Dog died.
Oh.
Okay. So whenever your best friend dies, you get depressed, right?
Yes.
You're very sad. When you're that age, people treat everything as not a life event but as a medical entity. So if you're depressed, you go see your provider.
They give you a pill.
Give you a pill. Maybe we should – let's do an MRI or CAT scan, make sure there's nothing wrong.
Right.
And go through that whole workup. When really all it is you
miss – It's a natural thing. You miss your best friend, yeah.
So when – depending on the person, when we heard this, we had a person who was thinking this and they were feeling like there wasn't really anything you could do, but they just really wanted another dog. We bought a dog.
Cheaper than medicine and less side effects, right?
Exactly. And person was happy. We were happy. And if it didn't work out, we would have done something else. But we have that flexibility to do what's right. It's just that because you're never trained that you could do that, it's hard to realize you have those options.
Well, and I think that business model, when you go into a hospital, and my mother had a fall almost 2 years ago now, hit her head, broke her wrist. She ended up in the cardiac unit. Well, they made an assumption because she was in the cardiac unit. Well, there was nothing wrong with her heart, but she had to go through all the tests and all the other issues. And, you know, but there was an assumption. Well, if she's in the cardiac unit, this is what she can eat and what she can't.
Right.
So there's no flavor. It's just, you know, cardboard food delivered and this stuff. And she's like, you know, this is bad. And I'm like, apparently they have you on a cardiac diet. She says, but they said there's nothing wrong with my heart. And you go through that process because there's this checklist. If you're in this room, you get this standard of care and this thing. So, and you see that it's like no out of the box thinking. No, okay, yes, this woman's 80 years old, but she doesn't have a heart condition. She's in the room because yes, her heart stopped for a moment, but that was a pain reaction. So everything, assumption of high blood pressure or those kind of things, have to change. You make a lot of assumptions, and we know what happens when you assume.
Well, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. And you also forget to ask the patient, in this case, the participant for us, not a patient, what is it that they would really want, and what would they like done? And we'll give them the choices, what we think makes sense, and we'll say that. But we really make someone, the family and the participant, a real partner in care as opposed to a partner in the decision we've already made.
Well, and we see cost-benefit analysis and all those kind of things, determining what medications and all that. But when you come to think about it, my father died of melanoma 18 years ago. But he was perfectly healthy, except he was dying of cancer. But then, you know, they were concerned about pain medication. They didn't want to give him pain medication because he could get addicted. And I'm like, he's dying.
Right.
You know, right? The logic of that. But here's their checklist again that says, you know, that's addictive medication. Well, he's not going to live long enough to be addicted. So let's do what it takes to make him comfortable. And those kind of conversations should not be happening in an educated system, which this model sounds like. It takes away that standard checklist of, okay, you have to have these 12 tests because it doesn't pay for this test until we've done those 12.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. That's absolutely right.
But with this model, it changes your cost structure. It changes the level of care, the relationship. It is Marcus Welby back in the medical practice today.
Yeah, exactly. And we think it makes us more responsible because we're required to be more engaged, and we personally like that kind of a model, and it's also predicted. So, you know, here's how much money it is, and here's what we're going to do, and here's how we're going to go forward. Let's think through this, what really makes sense for everybody, And it also really involves a team of providers. So it's not just a physician. It's, you know, your PT, your OT. And we might have someone, you know, instead of Medicare saying with this diagnosis, you should only see the physical therapist 8 times and then you argue about it should
right.
be 10. We might have someone only see the person 4 times and then change their minds and see 12 times or to begin with 20 times. We allow to do what makes sense. It's also, that is the handcuff for medical providers. They have that on them now. I want to be fair to who
right.
provides care that way. But we don't have that restriction, which is the plus and minus. Now we have to be responsible to everybody in a different kind of way than you were before.
So we're going to take a break. And when we come back, let's talk about how it's different for your employees and your team working in that kind of atmosphere, because I can imagine it would be very liberating as a physician, as anyone practicing, to be able to have those relationships and make those choices. This is Focus on Business, and today my guest is Brian Toomey of Piedmont Health Services, and we've been talking about their innovative PACE model for care of seniors who have health challenges that would normally take them out of their homes under the traditional medical model, and instead they get to be in their homes. It sounds richly rewarding to be able to do medicine as the Marcus Welby, oh, let's call it the Marcus Welby model. You're listening, you're building a relationship, you're making the right decisions, not based on a cost-benefit analysis, but what does this particular patient need? From the flip side, I see medical professionals that are always just frustrated because they can't practice medicine. They have to practice insurance. And so this model seems like it would also make a richer life experience, professional experience for your employees interacting with these patients.
So that's absolutely true. So we're just looking at it earlier today. So in the time that we've had our PACE program opened, we had one site, now we have two. We started in Burlington, now we're in Pittsburgh. We have enrolled 354 people, so we've taken care of 354 families is the way we look at it, to be able to stay as independent as possible at this time in their lives. And in order to do that, we need staff who are really committed to working in a very different way. And it's just as you described. This is a high-touch, high-care way to approach being with participants. And that's great news. And it's also, like every relationship, the more you put into it, the greater your joy and also the greater the heartache when someone passes away and those kinds of things. So we expect a lot of our staff because they really see themselves as really an extended member of the family.
A true caregiver.
And that's a great blessing. And so what I think sometimes we certainly don't fully understand as, you know, administrators and those things is that part is great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah?
But at some point, you know, when I've lost both my parents, and it was very, very difficult, and I miss them. But I had two people I had to deal with. I didn't have 354 people.
Right.
And so the hardest part is probably the part that's the greatest joy, which is the relationship.
The more connected you are, the more you're not losing a patient. You're losing someone you cared about and had a relationship with and loved. I mean, it's...
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And then the other thing we don't take fully into account is also how that also affects our fellow participants. Because everybody gets to know each other in a way that they never thought they would. We have people who thought they'd never have another close relationship in their life because they're living at home alone
right.
and that. And now they're engaged with people in a way they look forward to talking to each other, sharing, you know, long histories and those things. And when something sad happens to one of our participants, it affects other people too.
Right.
But they see the life cycle. And I think that's the plus and the minus, which is we are very much engaged in a life cycle at a very, very important time in someone's life, which isn't necessarily it's great, but it's also tough when people die.
My mother participates in a senior center. My mom, she won't mind me saying, she turns 80 next month. And she's 80 years young. She's active. She has all these things she likes to get into. But it is when you realize someone's no longer coming in the senior center, and then you ask, and it's, you know, and it's hard on the staff there because, again, it's someone that may have come there from the time they were a young 55 to, you know, in their 90s, they see them coming in to play bridge or whatever. And it's a really tough thing to continuously be in that mode of knowing the people you care about, the people you serve, are going to go to their next phase. At some point, they're going to pass.
Yeah, and so also to that point, so usually we have a finite number of friends, if you will, in
right.
our lives. And so when we get past a certain age, we think that it's just going to be attrition, not addition.
And who's going to be the last person standing, right?
But the advantage of PACE is actually there's addition to people's lives because they get connected with other people they never would have before. So it's not just attrition of friends that you had a relationship prior to being in the program. You actually broaden your world and have more relationships now than you
had
before.
That keeps that depression away.
Right.
It helps with the interaction, keeping the mind active.
Yeah.
And not becoming isolated. And I think a lot of us, regardless of our age, can easily become isolated because we get caught up in our work, our health issues. You know, it's easier to stay home with your migraine than it is to come out with your migraine and those kind of things. So it's important to think of that as a potential new innovative model for all healthcare, regardless of our age.
Yes, so we agree with that. We're excited about some of the opportunities that we think that Medicaid reform might present itself, in the state, although we don't know how it's going to play
right.
out. Because we think this kind of approach could really work with a lot of other people.
So is it up to the legislatures to decide how this Medicaid changes change? Who's influencing and making the decisions so that our listeners know who to call?
So it's it would certainly be local legislatures, state reps, state senators. In addition to that, it would obviously also include the governor. That would be helpful because it comes down to a program and policy approval as well as making sure there's the budget to in this category to meet that. Then there's also the policy and the regulatory piece. So that also involves the federal government with CMS and making some changes.
Right.
The last year, at the end of last year, one of the rare things that both parts of Congress and the president agreed on was something called the PACE Innovation Act. It was signed into law by President Obama, passed by the Congress last year, so that the idea of PACE could now be applied to people under the age of 55 also, who also meet some of the other criteria. So think about people who might have a developmental disability, a physical disability or a psychiatric disability that could take advantage of really having this kind of intensive care program in this way.
And it's a continuity of care. There's not as right. much turnover. There's not as much non-responsiveness or slow reaction because it's a concentrated number of people staffed to serve them with only what they need.
That's right. So when someone asked me years ago what PACE was, I said every medical provider has had this experience where they've said, you know, if Medicare would only let me do what made sense, I could really help this person out. It's just that I have to follow their rules. And Medicare and Medicaid basically said, you know what, you're right, we're going to let you do that. Here's
on this limited basis.
And here's right. the money, okay. here's the people, here's what to do, go at it.
It's a form of the concierge medicine that a lot of the medical practices in the face of Obamacare, Affordable Health Care Act, decided, well, I don't want to go through all of this process, so I'm going to take a limited number of customers at a set amount paid each year, and we provide soup to nuts, a la carte services based on that set fee.
That's right.
And so, but it's not a high set fee, it's a cost-effective, let's say, set fee, because it is taxpayer dollars coming into a system. But again, you said it was 5% cheaper to do it this way than what the government does under normal structures.
Yeah, so the Medicaid rate, we get paid 95% of what a nursing home would get paid. And we know that the total cost to Medicaid and Medicare is between, depending on who you ask, between 5 and 7% less than it is in any other way. And so we're, you know, whereas there's some dialogue, if you will, about Medicaid, managed care. Oh, they'll take their percentage of their administrative costs. We have all the costs.
Right.
And so we're responsible for everything. And, again, we're the provider and the payer and those things. We were talking earlier about why people need care and not. And so if you think about a senior, what are the more what are the at-risk issues? You want where most costs come into play is either someone either gets an infection, they fall, they're not eating right, they're not taking their medications right, or they're alone and depressed,
right.
And all the above can happen. If you can take care of preventively those five things, that takes care of a tremendous number of problems. And so that's what we really focus on is where the high-risk areas. So we can put ramps into homes. We can evaluate people's safety at home. We can do what's necessary to prevent those problems that often lead to second, third, and fourth generation
problems. Well, and like in my mom's case, when she fell, it was as a result of over-medication for blood
right.
pressure. Her blood pressure was dropping too low, and in this case,
right.
she tripped and went down. Where if with this model, there's a monitoring of that. There's a more close than every 3 or 4 months, or she loses weight, the dosage is now too high, whatever it is. And that's an important thing, too, because you're reacting more quickly to changes in that individual.
Yes. So again, we have transportation, and so that's, again, a cost, but for us it's a benefit. And so we pick people up in their homes. We can see any slight changes in their home,
right.
those kinds of environments, bring them in, and then we'll see people on a daily basis. So we can see problems before they get large, whereas many people, they'll go to a day center where the physician isn't, and they'll report
right.
something, and they'll say, okay, set an appointment and come in. And you're only seeing a snapshot of the person versus the whole portfolio.
How they're feeling at that moment in time
right.
versus the trend of how they've been doing, because you see them every day.
Yeah, and sometimes seniors understandably feel a little scared to be totally honest with providers, because if they're afraid they say something, they might, you know, have the new test, or they're going down a road of a problem. And so this way, though, the way to address that is through a relationship, because we have a relationship
right.
with people. We can get to those things.
Well, and they don't want a diagnosis that's going to force them out of their home, which in this case,
right.
there's no fear of that. So they can say, well, I haven't been feeling too good. I'm a little depressed. My dog died. All of these different things. And then you get that full perspective and that fear that I'm going to get a diagnosis that says I can no longer live in my home and somebody's going to put me in a box somewhere and feed me a couple times a day, right?
That's exactly yeah. right. And again, the only way you qualify is someone's already said you have enough problems where you should be out of your home. We're trying to now say, okay, we got that. Now we're going to make sure you stay at home.
So you said you have two of those centers now?
Two centers, one in Burlington, one in Pittsburgh.
And so what's the projected expansion of the PACE program and adding more centers?
So we will fill. We've actually just modified our Burlington site so that we can add another 30 participants there in that area, and that takes care of people from Alamance County, Caswell, and Northern Orange County, and our Pittsburgh site takes care of people from Lee County, Chatham County, and the rest of Orange County. We will have about 170 people enrolled at our Pittsburgh site, 185 at our Burlington site, and we now want to look at creating a third site somewhere, you know, in the northern part of our area, either just in Caswell County or northern Orange County.
So in replicating these models, you've had these great lessons and growing it and creating it and finding out what works. What kind of replication is out there for other places, other organizations to follow your success?
So there are 10 PACE programs in the state of North Carolina. North Carolina is the third largest number of PACE sites in the country. We think if you want to talk to elected officials, there's been some concern on a statewide basis about expanding PACE for dollar reasons. We think it saves money. We're not sure what that argument really is, but I would encourage people to talk to their elected officials to make sure that PACE is available to everybody in the state of North Carolina. We think that's a fair thing.
Well, given that our population, you said, I believe the number was 85% before too long, of the state is going to be in this category.
85 of the counties will have more
okay.
people over the age of 65 than under the age of 18.
And so we know where we're heading, so we need to be smart with our resources, the financial ones, but I'm thinking of the people ones. I know what I get out of having my 80-year-old mother in the home with me. We're there for each other when it's needed and those kind of things. But then I look at my neighbor. She's fallen twice, had hip replacement. It was done incorrectly, had it again. You know, she's had all these issues. And that transition that could have had to have happened for her and her husband if they hadn't had the insurance, if they hadn't been able to have in-home care and things like that from their providers. So it's really important for us to look for innovative models out there and look for the lessons learned. And we're not that good at it, I don't think, in this country, in that sector, and taking the lessons we've learned of how to save money and deliver higher quality care in the health care sector.
Right.
Because, you know, most people probably don't know that these programs are out there.
Well, that's very true. So, look, we really believe in the work that we've done from 1970, and we think that keeping people in community is the first and foremost goal. We think that for health centers, especially ours, the community part of our growth really had to do with local community members making sure it happened. And that's really code for it. It was really moms and women who made sure there was health care for their families and really forced the issue for organizations to come into their areas. We love partnering with people like that. We personally think it's moms and women who really do make health care happen. And we think that, we're 45 years old. We think we're now taking care of the fifth generation of the same family that we started with years ago. And we think it's our responsibility to make sure that, well, once they got to a certain age, it's not our problem anymore. We think we want to make sure that we keep everybody in a community.
From birth to death,
right. And so we see that as a critical piece for what we do. We like intergenerational programming. We think that that's very, very helpful. We think that that's the basis for healthy communities. We have always done on our health center side of life, because of all the uninsured we've taken care of, our goal is how to do very responsible, high-quality care at the most cost-effective way possible. And we took that model and applied it to senior care. We now want to continue to apply that model in all that we do.
To
all life care. We take a taxpayer dollar very, very seriously. And we also take making sure that people get high quality care very seriously as well.
So when you think about shifting the models, what barriers are there? Is it purely regulatory barriers to the whole shift to life care and the doctors being Marcus Welby? Again, I love that expression. And maybe I should explain who Marcus Welby was, because I was kind of young when Marcus Welby was on. But he was really a general practitioner family doctor that got involved in the lives of his patients. So it wasn't just about the diagnosis. It was about the life events, too. So when we're thinking about shifting back to the good old family doctor, the GP that knew your elbow was connected to your head, and making those connections, is it a regulatory barrier? Is it a business model barrier? What is it that's stopping from a wholesale shift to cost-effective, reasoned decisions in healthcare?
So I think it's some of all the above. It's change. And so change is hard and when you think there's a way you don't have to necessarily change. You know, the old line is denial's not just the river in Egypt. And I think the more we stop denying the reality of where people are aging or not, the more we can actually get excited about taking care of people. Because I think the other piece that stops us is a doubt for some people to think that we really can do something differently. So why bother looking if you can't solve it? We don't agree with that. We think there's lots of ways. When you put the power of community together, we think it works well. So one of the things that actually distinguishes a community health center we started with from other organizations is by regulation. We have 19 program requirements, but one of them, which has been true since we started 50 years ago in 1965 in Boston, actually in Dorchester, we all have to be private nonprofit corporations. There's a lot of people to do that. 501c3, a lot of people to do that. We want to have community representation. Okay, a lot of people do that. But we're actually required to have a majority of our board, at least 51% of our board, are patients of the health center who look like the patients of the health center. So you can't have a lot of old white guys who just saw a doctor be qualified as a patient. You have to have the patients on your board member, your consumers, who really say, this is what we want to be.
Reflect the diversity of who you're serving.
That's
so the
exactly
participants
right.
are represented then in making the decisions and guiding the nonprofit.
And then we have more of a commitment, if you will, as an organization to the communities that we serve. And it's a mutual commitment that way. So we think that that's a critical thing, and we think it's important. Our board also has the same fiduciary responsibility that every board does. So that's a board that also is now responsible for approving a budget of just under $55 million, and soon will be $75 million. So it's an impressive group of people.
Well, one of the things that comes to mind, being a 501c3, we hear that, and then we think we are able to donate to a 501c3. Do you guys accept donations and funding, grants, those types of things to your organization?
So we always accept donations with a smile on our face. We'd be more than happy to accept donations. And, we have our website where people can contact and see how they can do that.
PiedmontHealthServices.org.
That's right. And in addition to that, we do apply for different grants and foundations. But for us, we have a federal grant, which is also helpful. The good news, we have a federal grant. But I think there's been some misunderstanding. Our federal grant actually for us in this current year will cover about 12% of our operating budget. So we couldn't operate without it, but it's not the thing that's making us thrive. It's really being responsible stewards of the resources that we have and making sure that we provide as much care and high-quality care to as many people as we can.
So if we were talking about your wish list for the organization what's coming up? What things would you wish for the organization in the next few years, and how can our listeners help with those?
So one example is we've been fortunate. An opportunity came up that we're going to be talking at a public meeting a couple days from now, January 21st. The Carrboro-Chapel Hill School System is looking to get approval for a bond issue. They've come up with a pretty interesting proposal where we could be part of on the Lincoln Center campus, where we could have a health center there so that we could take care of anybody in the community. But also they're going to have a pre-K there. They have a Phoenix Academy there, which is a alternate school for high school kids. That's actually my first job out of college. I was a high school teacher in alternate learning program for behavior problems. Probably my best job I had. And so we see it as an opportunity to do all things in the community. We see it as an opportunity to actually provide some training opportunities for kids who might never think about actually getting into health care. We see us providing some nutritional programs and health care for the pre-K and family members, as well as other members of the Carrboro school system, so that it's doing more stuff within community contexts like that. That's really what we're looking for.
So January 21st, and the meeting's being held where?
At the school's Lincoln Center, at the administrative office for the school system.
So what else is on the wish list? Is there the regulatory changes, those kind of
regulatory
things?
Changes, we want to be able to get another site approved, and we would like to have that done soon so that we can start serving people who really want to see us. We wish that we need to get another facility. We will be having a grand opening for a health center. We are just opening up now in Chapel Hill. And we think that we're ready to open up a new facility 3 years from now, hopefully the Lincoln Center, but another property if not there. And unfortunately, we're actually grown so much we actually need a bigger corporate space. So with 500, over 500 employees a year from now, we just need to have a bigger space to convene and be part of the whole.
You have growing pains.
Yes, we have growing pains.
And that's a great thing in this case.
It's a very good thing.
So again, your website is PiedmontHealthServices.org.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They can learn about your services there. If they're interested in donating to your 501c3, they can see information about their life gifts, I like to call them, as your estate planning and those kind of things are always important too. So if you had one tip to give anyone out there running a nonprofit or a business, what would you say is the most important thing that determines success?
Stay true to what your stay true to your balance of achieving mission, quality, and margin. And great things don't happen for anybody easily. You're trying to do something great, so do something great. And if it, and don't be afraid to ask for help from people, not just for their treasure, but also for time and talent. Those three T's, when you add them up, really that balance really does make a difference and get your message out there. Because, you know, there's a lot of things we need to do to help people. Use the three T's.
Talent, time, and treasure.
Right.
And on that note, I'm going to tell everyone to stay tuned to WCOM FM LP, Chapel Hill and Carrboro. And until next week, stay focused on the important things.
Thank you.